fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
It's Thursday. It's February the 2nd, 2023. So good to be with you. In the secular world, of course, it's Groundhog Day, but in our world, as you know, the feast is the presentation of the Lord. So happy to be spending it with you. Now, later in the program, I'm going to share with you the poignant letter that a famous physicist wrote to his departed bride, his dead wife. It is something else. I think you'll really, really be struck by it. And lots of other good stuff coming up. I want to give out the phone number to you so you can grab a line and call in. 888-914-9149 is the toll-free line to call to talk to me for free on the Cale Clark Show. It comes out of producer Jim's salary. All those, you know, it's like having a phone booth, all the quarters. 888-914-9149. It's hard to actually find a phone booth now. They're just not there anymore. Not as ubiquitous, but this show is always ubiquitous here for you. You can also email me, cale@relevantradio.com, cale@relevantradio.com. And you can follow me on Twitter, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. Well, as I said off the top, in the secular world, it is Groundhog Day. If you've seen the classic Bill Murray film of the same name, we actually talked about that a little bit last year. My friend Andrew Pettiprin, who's a big movie buff, wrote a piece, a blog post on the movie, The Spiritual Lessons of Groundhog Day. You'll know what I mean when I say, welcome to Groundhog Day. And for a couple of years, it did seem like we were all living the same day over and over and over again, like Bill Murray's character did in the film during COVID, especially during lockdowns. Every day seemed the same. And even though the secular world today is trying to figure out what it means when a large rodent comes out of a hole in the ground, like I said, we're busy celebrating the Feast of the Presentation of the Lord. But before I get into that, I do have to ask producer Jim, because just before we went on the air, he asked me, and I didn't have time to get into this with him, so I want to see if he's serious. Producer Jim asked me if I've ever eaten groundhog.
Yeah,
have you? Not that I know of. Have you?
It's delicious. Every time I have pork sausage.
Pork sausage?
Groundhog.
Oh, man. Okay. Oh, well, if we do still have any listeners left, producer Jim, let me talk about the presentation of the Lord. I'll tell you, it's always good to start off with a laugh. And hey, if you're celebrating under the old tradition, the Christmas season used to actually end today. I bet you, producer Jim, you probably have your tree up. You probably were just taking it down today because you're into the traditions, which are great.
It bit the dust about a week and a half ago. It was too dry. I said, we got to get this thing out of here.
So you went with the real tree, obviously. Yeah, that's
always,
crucial. Yeah, that's absolutely crucial. Well, in the old days, of course, as I just was about to say, the Christmas season wouldn't end until today. And it actually formed kind of a nice triptych, if you will, kind of a tripartite balance with Christmas, Lent, and Easter, because there were 40 days for the Christmas season, there were 40 days for Lent, and 40 days of Easter. So how about that? Well, one of the great things about the presentation is the gospel reading when Mary and Joseph bring the infant Christ to the temple. They encounter two aged individuals, the priest Simeon and the old prophetess, the widow Anna. And we live in a culture that's let's face it, it's anti-aging, it's anti-elderly in a lot of ways. We saw this especially during the COVID struggles that we had. A lot of seniors died in especially during the early days of the pandemic, during the Delta wave. They died in homes for the elderly, and they often died alone without seeing their families. And it kind of brought it back into relief for people how we tend to want to push the elderly out of our lives at times. And one of the things that Father Rocky told us today at a staff meeting at Relevant Radio, and it really struck me when he said this, he was kind of talking about something else, but he said at one point, the clock is ticking for all of us. The clock is ticking for all of us. And really, we don't know how much time we've got left. And a lot of us probably envision living to old age. We maybe don't think about it that much, but one never knows. And another thing he said was that, let's face it, in 100 years, none of us are going to be here. We have to seize the day. We have to seize the day. And that's what we do here at Relevant Radio. We want to use the media to reach the world for Christ. And St. Paul said, today, today is the day of salvation. Now is the acceptable time. So really, this is the moment. This is the moment to borrow the words of Steve Jobs, to make a dent in the universe for Christ, to make a dent in the universe for Christ. And we've got to work. We've got to live really well. We've got to live for Christ. We've got to suffer for Christ. And one of the interesting things about Simeon and Anna, we'll talk maybe a little bit more about this later, is that Jesus is always there for us. And sometimes we're not aware of the fact that he's always calling us in the moments of our lives. But sometimes he makes himself known in a very particular, very unmistakable way at a certain phase of our life. Sometimes it's in the springtime of life. Some people really have an encounter with Christ that's life-altering. Maybe it's a vocational call. Or maybe it's the moment when you realize that he wants you to become a saint. He wants you to become a canonizable saint, and it changes the trajectory of your life. But sometimes God comes to people in the twilight of their lives, as the candle is burning down. And of course, today's feast is also known as Candlemas. And sometimes it's in the evening glow of life that Jesus makes himself known. And that's what happens today in the gospel. Simeon, the aged Simeon and Anna, meet Christ. And last night I shared with I had a kind of a prayer meeting with a group of guys, and I shared with them an excerpt from a book that I'm reading, and it's about a doctor. And his cause of canonization is actually open. His name is Dr. Ernesto Cofino, and he was a physician in Guatemala. He was a humanitarian. He was a pioneer in pediatric medicine. A really, really interesting guy. Really accomplished professional. And there was a book that was written about his life by Thomas McDonough. And on the back cover, guess what? Speaking of Father Rocky, Father Rocky endorsed the book. So if he says you should read it, you should probably read it. And here's what Father Rocky said about this book. And the book is called No Small Goals, The Life of Dr. Ernesto Cofino. Father Rocky said, "This is must reading for anyone interested in seeking holiness in his or her ordinary life. Holiness is not something sentimental and sweet. It's gritty and challenging, requiring human virtues overlaid by the supernatural virtues. This is clearly evident in the life of Dr. Ernesto Cofino, whose dedication to his profession, his capacity for friendship, and his trust in his Father God are traits that we all need to foster." And talk about trust in his Father God. I want to share with you something from this book, this biography of Dr. Ernesto Cofino, that really, really hit me hard. And it's something that happened to him when he was an older man. When he was 74 years old, he got mugged, which is not a pleasant experience, but somehow this became a profound supernatural lesson for him. I want to read to you what he wrote about this. This is Dr. Ernesto Cofino. He wrote about this in his diary, and basically, just to set this up, this was 1973, and he had driven over to his daughter's house. He was going to a family get-together, and it was dark, it was raining, it was kind of a tropical, you know, just downpour, and he couldn't find a parking spot in front of the house, so he parked on the opposite side of the street, and can't really see where he's going. It's a driving rain. He's walking to the house, and then all of a sudden, he feels a punch to the gut. Somebody has hit him in the stomach. Then he feels an arm around his neck, and he's being dragged to the ground. He's being mugged. And all he could figure out is all happening so fast. There were two guys, couldn't see their faces, and they just started wailing on him. They just started beating him, and he falls into the mud. And then they're just trying to take everything that they can find from him of value off his person. One of them tried to grab his wedding ring off of his finger. Suddenly, As they're looking for his wallet, they're looking for this, they're looking for that. All of a sudden, they just run away. In the middle of this beating, in the middle of this mugging, they just take off. And then 2 seconds later, a policeman is there. And he reaches down, he picks up Dr. Ernesto off the ground with a very strong hand. He picks him up, sets him on his feet, and then he runs after the thieves. And he's just like, he doesn't know what has hit him, Dr. Ernesto Cofino. He just starts thinking, what in the world just happened? He's 74 years old. He's frail. He's just been mugged. And he staggers into his daughter's house. He's bloody. He's covered in mud. Everything's disheveled. And The author of the book, Thomas McDonough, says that, quote, for anyone his age at 74, something like this would be a cause of stress and considerable fright. But for Ernesto, who read the will of God into every situation, he had touched the love of God. And he set it down in writing, referring to himself in the third person, so as never to forget the experience. So I'm going to read to you, this is a selection from the personal diary of Ernesto Cofino about now. So he's describing it as if it's happened to someone else. So it's in the third person, as I just said. So here's the quote. Quote, everything that happened had bolstered his profound faith, well rooted in God, a God who he feels is nearby, so near that he lives in his heart, who gives him his daily bread, who is intimately mixed into all the activities of his day. For him, it is a fact of which he hasn't the least doubt, that God has given him a divine vocation and has called him to his service without drawing him out of his place, right there where he found him, in the middle of the world, in the warmth of a family, a spouse, a children, and children, in the exercise of his profession, in all his social work. There is no doubt that despite his insignificance, his wretchedness, and his mistakes, God has deigned to make him his instrument in order to accomplish many things for the benefit of others and to carry to people his word at the same time so that they draw close to him. He knows perfectly that the things he has received are gratuitous gifts which he cannot pretend to merit, gifts that he has to make bear fruit. He will have to render an account of his management of them when the Lord determines the moment he will have to leave this world. In his mind and heart is forged the sentiment that God is, for everyone, the most loving and caring Father imaginable, and especially for those who love him. He is better than all the fathers and mothers of the world put together. That poor man, and he gets into the mugging here, he writes, that poor man, humiliated, muddy, and beat up, got up and immediately felt fortified when he conceded that, astonishingly, this had been an act of God. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? In that dramatic incident, the Lord became present to that man, showed him his love, made him see that he wanted him to continue working, that he will accomplish a lot without thinking whether the years of life that remain are many or few. Our friend's incident is a privilege that undoubtedly few have the chance to experience. One would have to be aware of finding oneself on the edge of death and being saved in a miraculous manner. But above all, to know with firm conviction that the one who picked him up from the ground, the one who extended his powerful hand, was the Lord himself, he who on his way to Calvary had to pick himself up from the ground three times without any help before getting to the redeeming cross. End of quote. So I don't know about you, but I'm not at that place spiritually yet. I'm not at that place where I am so confident in being a child of God and being a son of God through baptism that if I were to get mugged and find myself, you know, just robbed, disheveled, beaten up, that I could somehow use that as an experience to touch the love of God. But that's exactly what happened with Dr. Ernesto Cofino at the age of 74. And this, how he associates the cop who just picked him up and lifted him up on his feet to Christ kind of picking him up. Man, that is just profound spiritual insights. That really, really got to me. That was one passage in the book. So it's really interesting spiritual reading. I'm really enjoying this book. And one other thing that kind of convicted me, and this is again something that hit me because I'm struggling with it in a certain sense, and I don't know if you can relate to this. And he was a member of Opus Dei, and one of the things that the members of Opus Dei do, they often pray this prayer card to Saint Jose Maria, who founded Opus Dei, and in the prayer card there's a line that says, you know, we need to turn all the events and circumstances of our lives into occasions to love God, love other people. And that's exactly what this guy did. He turned even this experience into an occasion of loving God and loving other people, and to bring the light of Christ to others. And so a lot of people would come to him because they knew he had a really, really deep life of prayer. And he had this gift and capacity for friendship. And that's what was in the quote that I read to you before from Father Rocky. He had an amazing capacity for friendship. And people would ask him about prayer, and they found out about his prayer life. And he would go to daily mass. He would pray the rosary. He would have what's called mental prayer, this conversational prayer with God twice a day in the morning and afternoon for half an hour each time. A few other things. And they would think, how do you get this done? I mean, you're a professional. You're a doctor. You are a really, really busy guy. You're a dad. And I don't think I can do this. That's what his friends would tell him. And so here's what he said to them. He said to his friends, quote, "The most convenient excuse is that we just don't have enough time. But the fact is, we do have time for many things in all aspects of life, but we haven't found the time for one or two of the norms of piety." And these are these spiritual things that we should do, really all Catholics should do every day, to try to get into God's orbit, to try to get in a place where God can mold us. There's this image in the scriptures of the potter and the clay, and that's exactly what happens when we put ourselves in God's presence through prayer and through the rosary, for example. Anyways, he went on to say, it's a mistake to forget. It's a mistake to forget this, or to not want to remember that time is God's. And it's to him that we ought to dedicate first place and not the reverse. I can't say I will give God the time that's left over after I do everything I have to do. And end of quote there. And that just really, really hit me, because I get into these ruts too, where I put off the prayer because I'm so busy. And this idea, just to flip it on its head. No. You don't have to make time for God. Time is God's. Time belongs to God. Your life belongs to God. And so you've got to give him the first fruits. And one of the things that we're doing right now on the other program I host here, The Faith Explained, we're going through the book of Exodus. We're about to get to a section there where there are all these case laws of ancient Israel, and they're really what they are is they're an expansion of the Ten Commandments. How do the Ten Commandments get applied practically in different situations of life that come up? And we're going to see this section where God talks about the first fruits. You've got to give me the first fruits. And very often people think about that in terms of financial giving, the tithe, for example. But it's not just about that. We need to give them the first fruits of our time as well, and not give them the leftovers. And if we do that, if we put him first, if we make sure that we give proper time to God in our day, he's gonna make sure that we have the time that we need to get done what we need to get done. And that really sometimes takes an act of faith, because it's, humanly speaking, it's hard to believe that, because prayer seems like, to a lot of people, and we talked about this the other day, prayer seems like a waste of time because you're not doing anything, quote unquote. You're not building something, you're not creating something. And one of the amazing things about Americans is their ingenuity and their drive to do. And that can be a holy thing, but understand that it's God's work. It's God's work in and through you that really counts. And this guy understood that quite a bit, the elderly Dr. Ernesto Cofino. So I thought that was really inspiring. I don't know what you think about that. I'd love to hear your thoughts. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. We got to take a quick break right now on the Cale Clark Show, but we'll be right back after this. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. They're a pro-life phone company, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to Relevant Radio or another pro-life charity of your choice. For a limited time, new customers who mention offer code Relevant Radio get a free phone with free activation and free shipping. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the program. So glad you're with me. 888-914-9149. As I promised, I was going to share with you a poignant letter that I saw on social media that was posted. And it was written by one of the most famous physicists in the world, Richard Feynman. I don't know if you know who Richard Feynman is, but he was one of his nicknames was the Great Explainer. He was not only a physicist, he worked on the Manhattan Project with Robert Oppenheimer, creation of the atomic bomb. But he was also really well known as a professor for taking extremely complex ideas and breaking them down so that even a child could understand them. That really does take a gift. And he wrote a letter to his deceased wife, and it is really poignant. I don't know what his faith background was. I don't know where he was coming from on that front. But I'll read the letter to you in a second. I want to get your thoughts on this. 888-914-9149. So Richard Feynman died in 1988. And here's a quote from him. He said, "The first principle is that you must not fool yourself. And you are the easiest person to fool." End of quote. Yeah, say that. You can say that again. And he was, like I said, he worked on the Manhattan Project. He won a Nobel Prize for his, not Nobel Peace Prize, but a Nobel Prize for his work in quantum mechanics. And he taught at Caltech for many, many years, undergraduate physics. And his lectures are still available all over the place, all over the internet. And if you want to understand physics, you might want to start with him. And that's not my forte at all. I was horrifically bad at physics and chemistry when I was in high school. And so anyways, maybe if he was my teacher, I would have been able to understand it because he had this way of teaching. And he had this incredible thought life. He refused conventional wisdom, and he kind of built, as one writer said, his mental computer from the ground up. And so he started off as a young kid mastering mathematics, and they found some notebooks that he wrote as a child, and he was writing about algebra, calculus, trigonometry, all kinds of stuff, and his own little notations on the side of the page. And his big question was, what can I know for sure, and how can I come to know it? And that's really where this quote comes from. It led to his famous quote, "You must not fool yourself, and you are the easiest person to fool." And scientist at MIT, Marvin Minsky, once said about Feynman, he said, quote, "When Feynman faces a problem, he's unusually good at going back to being like a child, ignoring what everyone else thinks. He was so unstuck. If something didn't work, he'd look at it another way," end of quote. I think we can apply that to trying to understand the faith as well. We have to strive to be great explainers of the faith because we have to, as one writer said, speak in tongues in a certain sense. We have to make the faith intelligible and understandable to people in our lives, break it down in a way that they can appreciate. And in order to do that, we have to kind of master the material ourselves. And Feynman knew that one of the best ways to learn something is to try to explain it, to try to teach it to someone else. They say that, I think, what is it, 90%? You can retain 90% of what you... When you're just learning something passively, you retain about 55%, but you retain 90% of what you try to teach to others. So it's much higher. And 97% of statistics are made up. I don't know if you know that, but I don't know if I got the numbers right on that. That's the bottom line. But you get the point. And this has probably been something that's held true in your own life, that when you try to teach a concept, it sticks with you, even if it doesn't necessarily stick with your students. At least, hopefully, you've understood it a little bit better. So you've got to break it down, you got to get unstuck, and also being like a child, as Feynman was. We have to be like that in terms of the faith. Obviously, we have to be very pure before God, very trusting before God, and that's that not childish faith, but childlike faith and trust that he wants. Jesus, I trust in you. The Divine Mercy Chapel, we pray it every day with Drew Mariani at 3 p.m. Central here on Relevant Radio. But at any rate, just one more quick anecdote about Feynman's career. There's so much that could be said about this guy, but he actually helped figure out what happened remember the Columbia Space Shuttle disaster? He was able to figure that out, and he investigated. He quickly realized that NASA had a problem with its engineers and its managers, And he said this. He said, quote, "For a successful technology, reality must take precedence over public relations, for nature cannot be fooled," end of quote. So he actually made this report on the unreliability of the space shuttle, and it was very incisive, very analytic, and he kind of helped figure out what would happen. He was a practical joker. He had a funny personality, lots of anecdotes. He played played the bongos in Brazil. He used to pick locks of people's personal safes at the Manhattan Project, and he just wasn't the typical professor. But let me get to the letter that he wrote. He was married to a woman named Aline, and she was very, very ill, died very young, not long after they got married. And this is a letter that he wrote, I believe it was in 1946, after she passed away. And this is what he said. He said, "Dear Arlene, I adore you, sweetheart. I know how much you like to hear that. But I don't only write it because you like it. I write it because it makes me warm all over inside to write it to you. It is such a terribly long time since I last wrote to you, almost 2 years. But I know you'll excuse me because you understand how I am, stubborn and realistic. And I thought that there was no sense to writing. But now I know, my darling wife, that it is right to do what I have delayed in doing, and that I've done so much in the past. I want to tell you I love you. I want to love you. I will always love you. I find it hard to understand in my mind what it means to love you after you are dead. But I still want to comfort and take care of you, and I want you to love me and take care of me. I want to have problems to discuss with you. I want to do little projects with you. I never thought until just now that we can do that. What should we do? We started to learn to make clothes together or learn Chinese or getting a movie projector. Can't I do something now? No. I am alone without you, and you were the idea woman and general instigator of all of our wild adventures." End of quote. So this is a letter that the Nobel Prize winning physicist Richard Feynman wrote to his deceased wife, Arlene. I want to just continue on just a little bit more here, but I want to get your reaction to this. He goes on to write, quote, "When you were sick, you were worried because you could not give me something that you wanted to and that you thought I needed. But you needn't have worried. Just as I told you then, there was no real need because I love you in so many ways so much. And now it is clearly even more true. You can give me nothing now, yet I love you so that you stand in my way of loving anyone else, but I want you to stand there. You, dead, are so much better than anyone else alive. I know you will assure me that I am foolish and that you want me to have full happiness and don't want to be in my way. I'll bet you are surprised that I don't even have a girlfriend, except you, sweetheart, after 2 years. But you can't help it, darling, nor can I. I don't understand it, for I have met many girls and very nice ones, and I don't want to remain alone. But in 2 or 3 meetings, they all seem ashes. You only are left to me. You are real. My darling wife, I do adore you. I love my wife. My wife is dead. Rich. P.S. Please excuse my not mailing this, but I don't know your new address." End of quote. So that just really struck me for whatever reason. I'm not even sure what to make of this, or really what the application is here. But when he said to his wife, writing this letter to his dead wife, Richard Feynman said, "You dead are so much better than anyone else alive. And I know that you will want me to be happy. You would want me to meet someone else, but there's only you. You only are left to me. Only you are real." And so, would you, if your spouse passed away, and maybe this has actually been a situation where, what would you want, if you died, would you want your spouse to remarry, or what would you think if your spouse said this to you posthumously? And I don't know what this guy's faith background was. I don't know if he believed, if he was a Catholic, a Protestant. I don't know. I should really look into this, what his faith background was, but or if he even had one. But he obviously thought there was a connection between he and his wife even after the grave. And I just thought it was first of all, the character of his love really stood out. This is, wow, this is incredible. This is how you want your spouse to love you. But I don't know. I just wonder what your thoughts are on this. 888-914-9149. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. All right. Well, listen, we're going to take a quick break right now, but we will be right back on the program right after this. Ever dreamt of seeing the sights in Italy? St. Peter's Basilica, the Sistine Chapel, Drew Mariani in the Colosseum fighting to the death. More info on our September Eucharistic Revival pilgrimage at relevantradio.com/Italy. Seats are limited.
Explaining the faith so you can explain it to others. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hey, 888-914-9149 is the number to call to talk to me. Hey, we've got a couple lines up. It's a great time to call. 888-914-9149. You got a good chance of getting in if you call right now. If you want to react to what we were talking about before, I read the letter that Richard Feynman, Nobel Prize winning physicist, he worked on the Manhattan Project, very famous teacher, the letter that he wrote to his deceased wife. And it was really powerful, I thought, really compelling. And I asked, what are your thoughts on this? Would you want your spouse to remarry? Would you encourage them to do so, even if they didn't want to? My two grandmothers, each of them took a different path. My maternal grandmother did remarry, and she was, both marriages were extremely long. And she had a wonderful second marriage. But my dad's mom did not. She didn't remarry. And St. Paul talks about this a little bit in his letters. He talks about, you know, whether or not, you know, widows should remarry. Should they just dedicate themselves to Christ? And it is kind of obviously an open question. It depends. It depends. It's a personal choice. Some people, they don't get on very well by themselves, for sure. And they might be better served. It just depends on a lot of circumstances, too. Depends on, I mean, I don't want to think about things like this happening, but before Patricia and I had our daughter, Michaela, I would have said, I would have no desire to marry anyone else if you were to pass away, God forbid that. But when you have a child, it's a bit of a different ball game. It's a bit of a different ball game. And I would want the same for her. If something happened to me, I would want someone to take care of my family. And but she's like, nope, I'm not getting married again. And I'd rather live with your memory than any man alive. I don't know. No, she never said that. But anyways, what do you guys think about this? Let's go to Rose in Chicagoland. Rose, thanks for calling in.
Hello, Kay. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, good, good. Happy that you're here as well. What's your take on this, Rose?
Well, like you were, I agree with everything you just said. There's a lot of circumstances involved. In my case, my husband and I are married 40 years, and it's a really good marriage. We're both Catholic. And we've had this discussion. I've said, if I go, you're the kind of guy who likes to go to dinner and be out and go to the movies, go for coffee. I think being alone would be a disaster for you. If anything ever happens to me, please do not feel any guilt going. If something comes along that you want to pursue a relationship, if it led to marriage, great. But don't ever think you have to be alone the rest of your life because I've asked.
I think for a lot of spouses that are in that situation, they might feel some sort of guilt, or maybe even think that they're somehow betraying the memory of their spouse who has passed on, if they were to think about remarrying. But that's kind of a false guilt in my books, and you certainly have to pray about it. And and marriage is for obviously this life, and death breaks the bonds of marriage. Of course, in heaven, nobody needs to be afraid of this. In heaven, you'll be, you know, it's funny that people have different reactions to that when they hear there is no marriage in heaven. Some people are like, yay. No, I'm only kidding. But other people are very like troubled. Oh, well, does this mean that I will not have this special relationship with my spouse in heaven? And please God that we'll both get there. Actually, you'll be more closely united than you ever were on earth if you're both in heaven. the bride of Christ, the church, our union in heaven with Christ. That's amazing. That's the heavenly marriage that our earthly marriages hope to point people towards and to try to be exemplary examples of. Thanks very much for that call, Rose. Appreciate that. And let's go now to St. Charles, Illinois. Let's go to Carrie. Hi, Carrie.
Hi there. How you doing?
I'm good.
I was going to tell you that I was 13 and my friend took me to his house.
Mm-hmm.
And in the living room was the most beautiful girl I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, wow.
And so we eventually got married. We were married for 33 years. And we have three kids and grandchildren and all that. But 11 years ago, she passed away of breast cancer. And I'll always love her, and I still talk to her,
mm-hmm.
especially if I'm driving in the car, find excuses. And also, if, you know, at first I used to be, when I was by myself, also my wife had told my kids, Dad has to get remarried, he will go crazy, because he always has to talk to somebody, like I'm doing right now. And at first, though, when I was in the house without her, you know, sometimes the house, if it's cold or something, the house will make just a bang or some sort of a noise in the, you know, roof or whatever, if it's real cold out here in St. Charles. And at first that used to scare me, but then I turned it around to every time something happened, some sort of noise, some sort of anything, I just go, I love you, Debbie. And so that's how I changed that around.
Wow.
And we just had a wonderful marriage. And so what happened is I went to a thing which I think is really important for anybody who has someone pass away for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
There's a thing called Grief Share.
Mm.
And Grief Share is a recovery program.
Okay.
And it's a biblical-based recovery program. And eventually I was there. I liked it so much that I eventually became an assistant for it.
Hmm.
And in the third year I was there, a woman came in and she was telling this story about her husband.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, all the different people said, hey, let's go out to a restaurant or something. So we were all just sitting around talking and so on. Anyway, she and I fell in love. And after being together for 3 years, we got married. And now we've been married for 5 years.
Oh, congratulations.
And she and same sort of thing, you know. She'd have the same thing. We'd be at her house and the lights would just dim for no reason. And we'd say, oh, that's John, her husband. Or if something happened in my house, that's Debbie doing that. But we know that Debbie and John both wanted us to get remarried. And so I'll always love Debbie. My wife will always love John.
Of course.
And so, you know, we know they're in heaven, they're waiting for us and not worried about it.
Mm. Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think did it give you some peace that your wife explicitly, Debbie, had told you that, you know, she wanted you to remarry? Did that?
Yeah, not only that, she told each of the kids, this is what you're going to do. Also, here's another thing she said to me. When we knew for sure, the day we found out for sure she wasn't going to make it, she, you know when your wife points at you with her finger? She pointed me with her finger real dramatically and goes, this is your opportunity to tell the most people about how to go to heaven, how to be saved by the Lord, because everybody is going to be listening to you. And so this is part of why I'm calling you right now.
Wow, that is very powerful. She was right, because now you're literally talking to millions of people right now. And what a powerful testimony, and what a true miracle. This is I'm so glad that you called in to share that, Carrie. God bless you, Carrie, in St. Charles, Illinois. And I've been to St. Charles. I gave a talk in St. Charles recently, the St. Rock Center, a beautiful, beautiful ministry there. And anyways, Carrie, that was really, really well done. Really well done. And I'm so glad that you took the time to call in. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. It's Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Let's go to Rolando now, who's calling from Mission, Texas. Hi, Rolando.
Hello, Cale. How are you doing?
I'm well, sir. Yourself?
Good. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Thanks for calling in.
I'm a first-time caller. I just started hearing your program maybe about 2 months ago.
Uh-huh.
And I love it. I love it. My faith has grown so much because we don't have what you teach over here where I live. You know, and all of this is like opening my mind to love more the Lord from what I have loved him all my life. I've been a Catholic all my life. My parents both passed away. They were married 65 years.
Wow, that's a very long, great marriage.
I've been married with my wife. It'll be 38 years in February. And the reason for my call was that we have a disabled child. Mm-hmm. She was born with spina bifida.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. A very debilitating illness.
Yes, it is.
She's gone through 22 operations, head to toe, and she's on her second kidney transplant right now.
Oh, my goodness.
But she's a blessing. She's a blessing because usually spina bifida children, they don't walk. They're usually in wheelchairs, a majority of them.
Yes.
Well, my daughter started walking at 2.5 years.
Wow.
Which for a spina bifida child, it's unheard of.
Yeah, that's very unusual.
Yes, and especially in 1985 when she was born, mm-hmm. we actually had to go 4 hours, you know, to keep our child alive because where I live here in the valley, Rio Grande Valley, for my daughter, she was. So when we took her to San Antonio, mm-hmm. it saved her life, honestly. It saved her life. And even though we've gone through so much, I donated one of my kidneys back in 96. Mm-hmm. It gave out on 2006, and her younger sister gave her the second one, and it's already been 16 years on that transplant.
Oh, my.
Yeah, but she's still right now, she's on stage 5 of renal failure, so she might be losing that kidney, you know, anytime soon, whenever the Lord wants.
What's her name?
Her name is Vanessa Lopez. She's 37 years old.
Okay.
Yes. So if you can keep her in your prayers.
Yes, we'll do. Absolutely. We'll pray for Vanessa and ask all our listeners to as well.
I know, Cale, the question that you asked, if my wife or I would be okay with my wife marrying again, and I'm 100% for it. I already told her that, you know. And since I'm 12 years older than her, you know, I told her, hey, you have been the best wife. That letter touched me because that's exactly how I feel about my wife. Mm-hmm. And I feel that every husband should feel that way about their wives. Otherwise, why would you marry them?
Absolutely. There's got to be that passionate love and that deep friendship as well. That's really at the heart of marriage. And Rolando, I'm so glad you called in. And I'm so glad sometimes I think people are a little bit shy to call in, especially if they're a first-time caller. But I'm so glad that you did. I'm so glad that you found the program. And I'm so glad that's been helpful for you. Very kind words that you said earlier. And please keep us in prayer. I need it. And we'll definitely keep praying for you and for Vanessa, too. And I'm glad that you told us her story. And I'm glad that you called in. That's just beautiful. Beautiful. Call anytime, okay?
Okay. Thank you, Cale.
Okay. God bless you. God bless you. Rolando calling in Mission, Texas. Beautiful. We have a lot of relevant radio listeners in Texas, the great state of Texas. Let's go now to Teresa in Covina, California. We're going to go to the West Coast. Hi, Teresa.
Hello.
Hi. You're on the air. Good to hear from you.
God bless you and Relevant Radio. Okay. I met my husband when I was like 15 and a half. We dated like 9 years. Or no, 7 years. But anyway, uh-huh. he loved me. I wasn't sure about him because we were different. I mean, you know, opposites, mm-hmm. but we had chemistry. Anyway, we went on a fishing trip, and there was a story about this guy that was widowed, and he went to Vaughn's, and he buying his booze and was an alcoholic, and he ended up marrying the clerk. And I just told my husband, oh, I don't want you to go through that. I want you to marry. And lo and behold, like within 6 weeks, I was widowed. And so I went out. I was not a practicing Catholic. I went out for 10 years, and I never found somebody that I could trust. It looked like they had an agenda. And so I've been, you know, celibate and had my conversion like for 30 years. Now, I just want to add real quick. My brother was widowed. He had a miserable marriage. He had a neighbor who he was just friends with. She had a miserable marriage. Both of them ended up being widowed. And about 2 years after she was widowed, they got together and they married. And they were so, so happy together. And she passed not too long after their marriage, and he could have married anybody. It didn't matter what race. He was so wonderful, but he just loved her. And, you know, I think there are people who have this love, just like the physicists, that, you know, once you love, and that's it. And I don't see myself as that. I'm open, but I don't know. I just have to be open to God's will.
That's exactly right. We all just have to be open to God's will and the surprises that he may have for us in life. Teresa, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your story with us. Let's go now to Santa Fe, New Mexico. Lewis is in Santa Fe. Hi, Lewis.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I just wanted to call in. I lost my second wife November 19th of this year.
I'm so sorry.
I was married twice through the church. I lost my first wife. We had two sons. She died of breast cancer. And I stood alone for about 4 years, and I couldn't even be hugged. And then this lady who I married, she brought me out of the pit of despair, and we had a really good marriage. He developed a disease called MSA-C, which is a degenerative disease where her brain shrinks. And she just lost.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Able to swallow. And I just wanted to point out one thing from a couple of your other callers. Has love changed? And, you know, I had to do everything for her. And she would just, I mean, she'd be, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And I said, you know, don't be sorry. You know, we experienced great love, and this is how I'm loving you.
Oh, wow. That's beautiful. That's a beautiful testimony, Lewis. And oh, yeah. And just that's love in action right there. When you have to care for, because, you know, the sun doesn't shine every day. There's no question about that. And we age, disability comes for us all eventually. And just that is pure love in action there, the way that you cared for your spouse, Lewis. And thank you so much for calling. I appreciate that so much. I really do. Let's go down to Kate in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hi, Kate.
Hi. I just wanted to say the love of my life, 44 plus years, passed from ALS last May. Another guy as great as he was. I'll never find another guy. And I can tell you this, Cal. My husband and I, Al, used to say, we fell in love all over again every single day we were married. He was the best thing that ever happened to me. I'm not in a position where I'd want to marry again because I don't think I would ever find anybody as great. If God finds somebody for me, I might consider it. But right now, I mean, it's only been 38 weeks since he passed, and I have been a mess since he died. And I'll tell you, I just cry and cry and cry. I can't believe it's happened. We weren't blessed with children, and we were angry for a while, but we know why not now. He had genetic ALS. We would have passed it on to our child. So God saved me from watching somebody die from ALS twice.
I can't imagine. That is such a debilitating disease, ALS.
Tough.
Oh, Lou Gehrig's disease, yeah. And I did know someone who died of Lou Gehrig's disease, and he was a giant of a man. He was a football coach, and just to see him. I mean, because you obviously your brain is still sharp. You know exactly what's going on as your body is wasting away. That is a horrific disease, and God willing, they'll find a cure for it someday. And Kate, what a beautiful testimony about just falling in love every day with your spouse. We'll pray for his repose. What was your husband's name, Kate?
Don.
Don. Okay, we'll pray for Don, and thank you so much for calling in. Really appreciate you, Kate. That's a beautiful, beautiful testimony. Kate in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Wow, that's just a marriage is an incredible school of love. There's no question about that, and it's really it's obviously touched your hearts as well. That letter that I read, Richard Feynman's letter, and I'll post a link to that on Twitter, and I'll share it with producer Jim too, and he can put it in the show notes, and you can check that out. There's actually a little bit even more of a backstory that I didn't have time to get into about how he met his wife, Arlene, and she was sick. Even he knew that probably things weren't going to go very well health wise for her, but they got married anyways because of his great love for her, and it really is a beautiful testimony. And thanks to all of you who called in to share your story with me. Well, I'll be back on this program 23 hours from now, and I can't wait to join you again on the Cale Clark Show. Hey, I want to encourage you to stay tuned because Patrick Conley is sitting in for Timory tonight. He's got a special guest on Trending tonight. It's Father Brent Bowen, Dominican priest. He's going to be talking about how to discern your gifts, the charisms that God has given you, how to kind of bring those out. It should be an interesting conversation. And then later, after that, Father Rocky, the Family Rosary Across America, they're going to be on the road tonight. They're going to be on the road in Wisconsin, and they are going to be where? Holy Trinity Catholic Church in Casco, Wisconsin. So pray with Father Rocky later tonight. Jim Schaefer produced. Patrick Alog took your phone calls. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.